Herzlich willkommen bei Klinisch Relevant, deinem Wissenspartner für das Gesundheitswesen. Dreimal pro Woche, nämlich dienstags, donnerstags und samstags, versorgen wir dich mit unserem Podcast und bringen dir Fachwissen in deine klinische Praxis. Weitere Informationen und Angebote findest du auf unserer Webseite www.klinisch-relevant.de.
Heute hörst du eine Folge in englischer Sprache zum Update der S3-Leitlinie Kolorektales Karzinom. Unser Host Laura Reynolds spricht dafür mit Dr. Deepak Vangala, Facharzt für Innere Medizin, Hämatologie und Onlologie.
Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Hi and welcome to another episode of Klinisch Relevant in English. I'm your host Laura Reynolds and today I'm joined by a returning guest, Dr. Deepak Vangala, who is a specialist in internal medicine, hematology and oncology. You might remember Deepak from our episode in the past on stem cell therapy. If you didn't catch that one, I definitely recommend you go back and give it a listen. We'll put the link in the show notes. Deepak is head of the working group Tumor Genetics at the Ruhr University in Bochum, and he is the leading physician at the Outpatient Center for Hematology and Oncology in the Medical Care Center, MVZ, Augusta Bochum Mitte. Today, we're going to be chatting about familial colorectal cancer and Lynch syndrome in the context of the updated S3 German guideline for colorectal carcinoma, which came out in September of this year and was revised for the first time since 2013. Deepak has written a review article about these changes, which was published in the journal Oncology Research and Treatment in July of this year. So welcome back, Deepak, and thanks so much for joining me again.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Laura. It's good to be here.
Good. All right. So as I mentioned, we have the new colorectal guideline, which has just come out in September. And there's been a good few changes to the chapter on the familial colorectal cancer and Lynch syndrome. So do you want to start us off and tell us a bit about familial colorectal cancers and Lynch syndrome? Can you set the scene for us, remind us what this is and why should we be interested in it?
Yeah, so I think we should be interested in it. I think a lot more people know something about familial breast cancer, breast and hereditary breast and ovarian cancer. But familial colorectal cancer is, I think, or has got at least the same impact incidence and prevalence wise. And Lynch syndrome is the most common familial or multi-tumor syndrome, which mainly affects the large intestine and the endometrium, actually. We probably have got like 1 in 300 affected individuals who have got these germline variants, which predispose to this multi-tumor syndrome, which is quite a lot probably. And not all of them are known. Screening is picking up, and this S3 guideline had to be really revised because it was a little outdated, especially on the field of hereditary colorectal cancer. And I think now we've got a guideline which is, which can compete with the guidelines from other countries, actually. Yeah.
There's been a lot of change, I think, in the last number of years in genetics and these types of things, diagnostics. So that's good that our guideline now reflects what is being done also internationally. So what is new? What can you tell us in terms of the diagnostics for the familial colorectal cancers?
So these diseases, basically for like every practicing doctor, the red flags are if you've got a family with a lot of affected individuals with any cancer, that's always a red flag. A couple of generations, and so those patients, they come in and they say, yeah, my mom had cancer, her mom had cancer, and there's an uncle and some cousins. That should make you always think of a hereditary tumor disease. And the other thing is, of course, early age of onset, because the median age of onset for any cancer with, for example, Lynch syndrome is 44 years. So those patients are younger than the regular cancer patient. They don't have to be, but a lot of are actually. So that is the red flags basically anyone can think of if you got patients in front of you. This guideline was revised, the entry criteria for diagnostics were the Bethesda, the revised Bethesda and Amsterdam criteria, which have been from the 90s or early 2000s. And they basically are picking up on exactly that there is a young age of onset and a high familial prevalence in those individuals and their families. They have been revised at some point because families in the Western world are not that big anymore. So with the Amsterdam criteria, you really had to have a lot of affected individuals. They have got a high positive predictive value. Those criteria at that time, they were pretty good and necessary because the diagnostic methods were not as sophisticated as they are now. And that has changed because we got next generation sequencing. We can sequence a lot and pretty quickly without having too much of a financial impact. So it's not that expensive anymore. And so the diagnostics are a lot easier. Yeah.
So is it worth still looking at those clinical criteria? What you mentioned there, the Amsterdam criteria, is it still worth thinking about those things? Or is it enough to say, younger patient, let's think about doing some other diagnostics?
I think those criteria, they're really good, but I also think that there's hardly anyone who really knows them in everyday practice. So if you're working in that field, if you're working a lot with colorectal cancer, you might have them in the back of your mind and you might really pick up on them. But otherwise, I think the real red flags are ask your patient, think of like how old is your patient? And the other thing is ask them, is there a lot of cancer in your family who is affected? There are questionnaires, which you can also, if you look at that chapter in the guideline, you will find like a couple of links to questionnaires free of access. All the colon cancer centers, the certified colon cancer centers, they also have to have a certain amount of patients who have filled out some questionnaires about their the familial occurrence of these cancers. So one can look at them, one can use them if you're working in practice, for example. But I still think the red flags are ask your patients, is there cancer in your family?
Yeah. And just when I think of Lynch syndrome, I definitely learned that in the context of the colorectal cancer, but it doesn't always first manifest as colorectal cancer, if I'm not mistaken. So then you should still have maybe an index of suspicion if the cancer is even in another area. Is that fair enough to say?
That is... That's very true, but then again, it's not that common in other cancerous diseases. So, of course, if you meet someone who's got whatever gastric cancer or some bile duct malignancy, then of course, if they are telling you there are a couple of colorectal and endometrial cancer cases in their family, that makes it very suspicious. But the most prevalent diseases in Lynch syndrome are colorectal and endometrial cancer. So there you should definitely think of it. And what is new today is actually the other way around. So the background to the disease is that there is a defect in mismatch repair proteins due to pathogenic variants and mismatch repair genes. So there is this complex of proteins which basically repair DNA if there is like something wrong in replication, for example. Yeah, and if one of these proteins is not working properly, then you get a high amount of mutations. That's why those cancers, they have got a high tumor mutational burden. And so what we used to do was, when we were thinking of Lynch syndrome, first there was the cancer patient who would fulfill the criteria. We would look at the tumor tissue if there was a mismatch repair deficiency. So if one of these proteins was not expressed at the level it should be, or was not expressed at all, usually. And then the next step would be doing genetic diagnostics, so really sequencing that protein. So today, that has switched a little because mismatch repair deficiency is being tested in oncological practice quite often because there are treatments, special treatments for patients who have got this high tumor mutational burden due to mismatch repair deficiency. So all these immune checkpoint inhibitors, for example, which can be used in a lot of cancers. In the US, the FDA has approved them for all cancers agnostically in second line. If there is a mismatch repair deficiency or microsatellite instability, so a lot more patients get tested. And if you find that, you have to basically think the other way around. Could this patient who's benefiting from that treatment also have Lynch syndrome?
Okay.
So we're looking at it from two sides now. One from the therapeutical standpoint, someone is being tested for getting a certain medication. So basically predictive testing for, will that medication work? And the other thing is, also look at the patients who have got the classical criteria to get them into testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned it doesn't have much of like a financial burden on the healthcare system to test for these proteins. Is that, or like these genetic changes?
Of course, there is a cost to it, but for both tests. But it is not as it used to be. So sequencing is not as expensive as it used to be. And it's probably, it will even get a little cheaper. And you test for multiple genes today, and you got like high throughput methods, and the output is there pretty quickly. So that's why it's a lot easier.
The genetic testing, is that done? Is there any specific criteria? For example, if you just had a younger person, you could just then ask for this genetic testing. Will it be automatically done by a lab, or you have to like order this test?
You have to order the test. But that one of the things which is new is that with the novel S3 guideline, that any patient with colorectal cancer under the age of 50 should get multi-gene panel testing. No matter how the tumor looked, that is enough as an entry point for getting a multi-gene tumor panel. So for a couple of genes which are associated to familial cancer, not only Lynch syndrome genes, but also genes associated with polyposis, for example. So that is one entry point. For patients older than 50, and that is also new, all patients should get this mismatch repair, immunohistochemistry, or microsatellite instability testing. They are often used synonymous, but they are not the same. So one is looking at protein expression, the other is looking at basically some genetic findings. They are very congruent, but they're not exactly the same. But that can be, or should be done, actually, should be done in all patients with colorectal cancer. It has got, as I said, treatment implications. But if there is something, if there is a mismatch repair deficiency, patients then can get genetic testing. So that is basically the entry criteria. And they are very low level now. So it's easy to get into that. The test can be ordered in cancer patients by any treating physician, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they obviously would have to go undergo genetic counseling, presumably before the genetic testing?
Genetic counseling, yeah, that is, of course, recommended. Genetic counseling is especially necessary also if there is something, if you find a Lynch syndrome, of course, yeah, the patients have to approve for that test. They have to give informed consent. But for cancer patients, basically the treating physician can order the test. That's a little different if you do predictive testing. So, for example, you've got someone with a colorectal cancer, you find diminished expression of, let's say, MSH2, which is one of these proteins, and you can prove there is a pathogenic variant in MSH2, germline pathogenic variant. So you draw blood and you find that all blood cells also carry that variant. So you know it is not only associated with the cancer, but it's in every body cell, basically. So that is someone who got that from birth and who has got a Lynch syndrome then. So from that point on, you can predictively test blood relatives. And they are healthy, and they need genetic counseling. And there is a law in Germany, the Gendiagnostikgesetz, and that can only be done either by geneticists or by people who have got this special qualification in their field. So there is this fachgebundene genetische Beratung, it's called. So those physicians can also order tests or can counsel for predictive testing in their field. So it would be, for example, it could be surgeons, medical oncologists, gastroenterologists, basically. Yeah.
Thank you for that explanation. I feel like you're explaining this very well. I can follow everything, so that's great. If I have this correct, determining if someone has changes to these proteins and maybe at the genetic level, that has consequences in terms of the treatments available to them. But these changes can be from the germline, which is from birth, or they can be acquired during someone's life. So that whether they have these changes or not is it impacts their treatment available, but I suppose it only really matters if they have this Lynch syndrome, or what then is the importance of diagnosing them with the Lynch syndrome? What sets them apart? Like, what makes that a different entity to follow up or to treat?
The surveillance is different. So about probably one third of patients with mismatch repair deficiency in colorectal cancer are Lynch syndrome patients. Two thirds are not; they're sporadic. For certain deficiencies, some proteins, there is like an in-between test where you get like a high probability if it would be potentially sporadic. So you don't have to do germline testing if you find that. You can look that up in that paper or in the S3 guidelines. So there is something called promoter methylation for the MLH1 promoter, or for colorectal cancer, you can test for BRAF mutations, which is only possible for colorectal cancer. But the promoter hypomethylation analysis is basically possible for all cancers with MLH1 deficiency. So that is something which you can do in between before you go to genetic testing. As you said, treatment only depends on the mismatch repair deficiency or microsatellite instability in the tumor tissue. So germline is not important. It's really what the tissue tells you. But if there is a Lynch syndrome, then there is, of course, the question, what can you do to those patients or to those to those affected individuals? They have got this early onset of cancer. Median age, as I said, is 44. And there's this high probability of the family having cases or other cases in the family, because inheritance is autosomal dominantly. And the risk for every child, brother, sister, parent, basically, is then 50% of also being a carrier of that same variant. So there are very special recommendations for surveillance. So regular colonoscopy would start at age 50. You would go there every 10 years. In Lynch syndrome, the recommendation is, depending a little on the pathogenic variant, to start at the age of 20 to 25 or 30 to 35 and then undergo colonoscopy surveillance every other year if there are no findings. We also recommend upper GI endoscopy because of the risk of gastric cancer and duodenal cancer, which can be surveyed. The data is mostly retrospective, but we still think that there is a benefit in that. That's also a little different. So the German guideline recommends that a little stronger than other guidelines in the world. And there is a recommendation to counsel female patients for basically removing their uterus and their ovaries at a certain age. So not during childbearing age. Age of onset is a little later for these diseases, but still counseling should be done, just as for hereditary breast and ovarian cancer and certain germline variants there. So, yeah. And of course, regular, the otherwise regular cancer surveillance, which is recommended.
I actually feel like we've gotten through this very fast. I think we've given a good summary of what is new and what is different with the old guidelines for the colorectal cancer and the hereditary Lynch syndrome. And it, you know, it has therapeutic consequences if it's found to have a mismatch protein, mismatch repair protein deficiencies, and then obviously impacts on the surveillance and follow-up of patients or people who have Lynch syndrome, i.e. the genetic changes in their germline cells. Is there anything we're missing? And is there any take-home messages you'd like to share with us?
I think one big take-home message, and that's, again, the novelty, is mismatch repair deficiency testing in all patients with colorectal cancer. That's the new standard. And one can see that in the tumor boards, that it is being implemented. But I think that is something everyone still has to think of when you sit in the tumor board. Remind you're the ones who are moderating and who are talking about the patients in doing so. And the other thing is, don't forget to send those patients to genetic testing and testing for pathogenic germline variants if there is something hinting to Lynch syndrome, for example. Because there is some data. So other countries, they had universal tumor tissue testing for quite some time. So that started about 10 years ago in the US, and I think in Britain a little later. And a lot of actually European countries and Western countries had universal tumor testing, MSI testing, MMR testing for a couple of years. That has been done. But the next step of thinking of not only treatment consequences, but also thinking of the family and thinking of Lynch syndrome, that sometimes is missing. So there is, we looked at some published data. We have not published that meta-analysis ourselves so far, but it's about like 50-60% who are actually recommended to going to genetic counseling, and of that, like another 10% don't go there. So half of the patients with microsatellite instability or mismatch repair deficiency are missed for further genetic counseling, which has got a huge impact on the families if you find Lynch syndrome. So that is the other thing. So don't forget going the next step.
Yeah. So do you think, for example, going forward, a part of like the tumor board, maybe checklist or protocol would be, okay, we have confirmed it's colorectal cancer. Let's make sure we have, you know, point number one, checking for Lynch syndrome, and if found, needs to be added on to, or the patient needs to be recommended to go to genetic testing or genetic counseling.
Yeah, I think one can implement that in the protocols. And I think the GI onco crowd can learn a little from the breast cancer boards, because they have got that basically in all the protocols. So genetic risk, there are other factors coming up in the next years, like polygenic risk scores and things like that. So we will, I think, hear more about hereditary diseases and scores, which will probably adapt surveillance for those affected individuals and maybe also for the families a little more.
Mm-hmm. From a practical point of view, for example, when you're in the tumor ward, you're discussing it, the histology and all these tests are there. Is it as simple as just, you know, writing a request to the lab to do these further tests on the tissue they already have? Yeah, it's that simple.
It's basically that simple.
Yeah, okay.
Usually the pathologist is also part of the tumor board. So it depends on the local structures. But usually, I think the pathologist, when they hear, either there is an automatism to it, that it's done anyhow because it has to be done, because it's colorectal cancer, for example, or it is done after someone is asking, what is the MSI status? Usually that's the question. And if it's unknown, then that is basically already the hint to, we need that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's highly treatment relevant. So the data which we see in rectal cancer, looks like that there is a group of people who do not need radiation and surgery anymore. And the data for neoadjuvant treatment, for example, for colorectal cancer with immune checkpoint inhibitors, that is amazingly good. So also that might be a new standard in the future. And a lot of centers are already implementing that because the data looks so great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for jumping on with me and discussing this. The field of oncology is always just growing and it's so fast. And I think probably even for oncologists, it can be sometimes hard to keep up. So it's really good for the rest of us who are interested in internal medicine to keep, you know, up to date with what's going on. And especially this new guideline was just out in September. So thank you for sharing your expertise with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Vielen Dank, dass du heute wieder zugehört hast und unser Gast gewesen bist. Wir hoffen sehr, dass dir dieser Beitrag gefallen hat und du etwas für deinen klinischen Alltag mitnehmen konntest. Wenn dem so sein sollte, dann freuen wir uns sehr über eine positive Bewertung bei Apple Podcasts. Falls du Lust hast, mitzumachen und es einen Themenbereich gibt, in dem du dich besonders gut auskennst, dann melde dich doch gerne unter kontakt@klinisch-relevant.de. Gleiches gilt, wenn du Themenvorschläge oder konstruktive Kritik für uns hast. An dieser Stelle auch der Hinweis auf unseren Newsletter, den du unter www.klinisch-relevant.de abonnieren kannst und der dich immer auf dem Laufenden hält. Wenn du dich für unseren Newsletter einträgst, bekommst du einen 5-Euro-Gutschein, mit dem du in unserer Fortbildungsakademie einkaufen kannst. Wir wünschen dir jetzt bis zum nächsten Mal eine gute Zeit und freuen uns, wenn du bald wieder einschaltest. Pass auf dich auf, bleib gesund, bis zum nächsten Mal. Ciao.